This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night it was announced the ILA and the shipping companies and the ports have reached a tentative agreement or some type of an agreement. They've pushed back to January. They will report today back to work on the port, which is a good thing. And hopefully they're able to work out whatever their differences may be. It's interesting, though, and I said yesterday, and I got a couple of interesting comments from folks calling me a scab or otherwise because I'm just not wholeheartedly buying in to laborer wages that are generating on an average of $81,120 a year, knowing that the average labor rate out there is probably somewhere close to $15 to $18 a year. And then when you look at starting salaries for police and fire, you're looking at somewhere between $22 and $25 an hour there as well. That there seems to be, you know, those that are being paid far in excess what most other workers in this country are earning. And it seems as though people are upset when I said that maybe we should have an audit about what's going on with the ILA and what's happening with that workforce. Obviously, they play a critical role in the movement of goods through our ports. And because of that, shouldn't we demand to know more? Shouldn't there be more transparency about where we are? And when I read, you know, responses and statements by the ILA that says, you know, they responded to USMX's statement, that's the folks negotiating on behalf of the other parties, that distorts the facts and misleads the public. You know, they were saying that the so-called nearly 50% wage increase because it fails to address the demands of their members adequately. They might claim this is a significant increase. Everywhere I've worked, if I'd have received a 50% wage increase, it would have been big, right? They might claim it that it's significant, but they conveniently admit that many of our members are operating multi-million dollar container handling equipment for a mere $20 an hour in some states. Well, you can go to almost any business silo and you're going to find crane operators and operators of heavy equipment that are valued in hundreds of thousands, if not millions, for that same rate. What makes what you're doing any more special? And then what's interesting to me is, how does that matter to you? What risk do you have? None. You don't pay for these machines. You're not maintaining these machines. You're not managing these machines. Furthermore, our members are enduring a grueling 6-year wage progression. Really? Well, at their initial offer, it would have been a 12-point-something% increase annually for 6 years. I would love to hear from some folks out there that have ever had a 6-year progression where they would receive 12% a year in bumps in their salary. I worked 40 years and never had a 6-year stretch of 12%. And I don't know anybody that ever has. But they claim that that's grueling to them. When you consider that the cost of living index is about 4, maybe. If we want to be kind, let's just say 5. And you're doubling the cost of living increase and then some in your annual increases, that's grueling? Well, if that's grueling, I don't know how you refer to the rest of the country that's earning much less, right? It also says that USMX also overlooks the fact that two-thirds of our members are constantly on call with no guaranteed employment if no ships are being worked. It's the nature of the business. You don't have to be a longshoreman. It is what it is. Every business out there has challenges, from whether or not you have to work shift work or you work strictly days, whether or not there's guaranteed overtime or whether or not there's no overtime. There are multitudes of challenges, but you have every right to market yourself to go somewhere else to work. And if all of these things are so terrible, I go back to this. This particular union has right at about 50,000 members. You know what's odd? There's only 25,000 jobs. And I know you're saying to me, Newell, you got to be crazy. What are you talking about? There are 25,000 positions. And in fact, there's a royalty fee paid on every container that comes through the port that goes into a fund that provides money to those longshoremen who don't work 2,080 hours a year. That's what a 40-hour work week ends up being, 2080. Anybody that's ever managed people knows all these numbers. And inside of there, there's a formula that they, if they work at least somewhere around 1,000 or 1,100 hours, they're entitled to share in this royalty fund. And that royalty fund may pay them, depending on how lucrative or how busy the port was, that because it's based on per container basis and it's divvied up, there's a certain percentage that stays in their sinking fund or reserve fund, and they pay it out to the remainder of those that qualify for this bogey, so to speak. Sometimes it could be as high as $15,000, $16,000. Typically, they say on average, somewhere between $8,000 to $12,000 they get, and they didn't work. This is what I said yesterday, that it really begs of having an audit. That if we're going to allow a monopoly agency, union, that can hold up the entire country like this, I think that all of the parties could at least agree that we ought to right-size the organization, right? So we're not having to enter and engage in these exotic schemes, right? Relative to this. You know, and it's, what's really interesting, too, is that we spend a lot of time talking about all of these folks that are making so little money, but they don't ever really talk about all the folks that are making a lot of money, right? They got people making hundreds of thousands of dollars as a laborer. And you have to wonder why. In fact, in the 2019 to 2020 report of the Waterfront Commission of New York Harbor, it laid out this reality of the International Longshoremen's Association, the AFL-CIO, the ILA, over hiring into port for over 60 years. It's a brotherhood. You or I can't just go up there and apply and be a longshoreman. They perpetuate themselves. It's a genealogy morass. More than 590 individuals within this union receive over $147 million in outsized salaries.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And this is not required by the industry's collective bargaining agreement. And they get paid for hours that they're not even working. In fact, they're not even required to be at the port. And all of this gets factored in to the cost of goods delivered to you. So you as the consumer are financing these exotic payment schemes of the ILA. And they're looking for us to feel sorry for them. They're looking at us and calling us scabs on so many different fronts that it's absolutely incredulous. And we talk about, you know, whether or not there's any transparency as it relates to this. So, you know, when you give an organization this much authority and power, these are typically the outcomes that you see. So the settled offer, they say, is probably in that neighborhood of that 62% wage increase, which is going to equate to about $63.18 an hour. And if you're one of those that have seniority and you're one of those that are fortunate enough to work 2,080 hours as a laborer, you're going to earn $131,414. The present average rate was at 39. The average rate at this point in time is going to be somewhere, you know, north of that for sure. The settled rate at that is, you know, like I said, $63.18. You're talking about a $24 an hour pay raise over a 6-year period of time. Keep in mind that that is a grueling, grueling period of time that you have to wait for those increases. So if the average is at 39 and you get 10 on in the first year, 10%, you're at 42 and some change. And then on top of that, you're at 46 and some change. And on top of that, you're now at 50 something and some change. And it moves on and it moves on. At $50 an hour, or at $58.50, it's $121,680. That's actually what the folks offered in the first place, what management offered in the first place, right? USMX. And that wasn't enough. And then we're talking about automation. You see, this whole automation thing is interesting because they're still holding on to these jobs. They recognize and they say that these folks can't work because of automation. There's not enough work for these folks. Why are we compelled to continue to employ them? There are other laborer jobs out there, albeit not that pay, you know, the sweetheart numbers that are paid here. I get it. I understand it. But whose burden should that be when the numbers are so out of sync with traditional labor jobs in this country? Who waved the magic wand to say that this laborer job on a waterfront, it's only in a different locale, a piece of geography, it's still unskilled labor for the most part? Who waved the magic wand to make them get paid 3, 4, 5, and 6 times greater than every other laborer in the country? Does that make sense to you? Because it doesn't make sense to me. And the reason that is is the cost of the good soul. An individual recognized there's a ceiling as to the price that people are willing to pay for a lot of things. And when we start seeing what's happening here and the lack of a desire to right-size the organization or otherwise and to continue to try and perpetuate payment for individuals that are working half-time and then have some exotic financing scheme for them to keep them in the loop because they bring value, right? The bigger the numbers, the more impact they can have relative to going out on strike. Their families, their family's friends, everybody rooting for them. That's all this is about. It's a big game. But it's a game where you're financing it. And it seems as though we have no right to know anything. And our spineless president is sitting there saying, I embrace that. I embrace the process of collective bargaining. And it's okay, in my view, that if you're within a baseball's throw of a piece of water, that you can earn 5 and 6 times greater than any other laborer in the interior of the United States. Doesn't seem fair to me. What do you think? We'll be right back.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.